Welcome everyone, this is Chewing Gum for the Ears, where music, tech and retro meet. I'm Steve Litchfield, I'm with my regular co-host for this podcast, Ted Salmon.
Hello everyone, greetings.
Yes, and our special guest this week, or this show, is Nath. Are we allowed to know your surname? Is it Nath Jones, is that right?
Yeah, it's Nathan Jones, yeah, but I go by the name of Nath.
That sounds very rock and roll, very, yeah. Very music. Just a few reminders of URL, stevelitchfield.com/music. We'll have the show notes and links to all the albums and tracks and events that we link to, just to save you typing in the URLs. Also on Twitter, I'm at Steve Litchfield. Where are you on Twitter or other social media, Nath?
You get me on Twitter at Nathan L. Jones.
Okay. And anything on Google Plus, Facebook?
I'm on Google Plus. Just look for Nathan Jones, Lucifer in brackets. That's purely because of my profile picture.
Okay, say no more. And Ted is at tedsalmon.com. Links to any of his social media profiles.
Yen Oli, yes, Ben. Yes, Ben. I think the J's are wise, I reckon. Anyway, he's feeding back on in the Google Plus community on Sarah Brightman. We were talking about Sarah Brightman last week, and he says, hi, Steve and Ted, just listened to number 12 show. And I must confess, I'm a long-time big fan of Sarah Brightman. I especially love her work where she combines rock and classic. The best record to showcase this is, in my opinion, the album Fly, where she sings duets with Tom Jones, Chris Thompson from Manfred Mann, and Andrew Eldritch from Sisters of Mercy. Worth a listen. By the way, it was the troupe Hot Gossip she joined in 1977, uh-huh. Not Pans People or the other one. I remember seeing her on the Kenny Everett show in I Lost My Heart to a Starship Trooper. God, that takes me back. You can find a lot of his shows on YouTube. Love to listen to your podcasts, plural, and chewing gum fits perfectly with his age, 59. He lives in Denmark and has been aboard since the start of All About Symbian. So, yes, going back some way there. Thanks for that, Jens. I reckon that's how we pronounce your name. Do head across and look at the show notes for a link to Sarah Brightman's Fly. So what's new this time? We'll have a quick look at what's new and coming up in the coming weeks. So James Blunt has got a new album. Now, don't sigh at the moment, because I know that he's got this reputation of being a kind of housewife superstar. But he's got a new album out called The Afterlove, released on the 24th of March. And we'll put a link in the show notes to one of the songs from that. To be honest, it sounds quite samey to me, but it's worth a try, because I think, you know, he's quite a good singer-songwriter. The Chainsmokers, Memories Do Not Open, is another album, which might be quite interesting. I, as you know, previously had kind of appreciated the Chainsmokers as a kind of, you know, recent-ish band, and not a prog rock band. That's coming along on the 7th of April. And guess what? Blondie's around.
Wow.
Debbie Harry's 71, you know. And she's got this, well, they've got this new album out called Pollinator. On the 5th of May, it's being released. And again, we'll put a link to one of the tracks. I mean, it sounds very kind of poppy, and as you'd expect, I guess. But she certainly doesn't sound her age on the recording that I listened to. But yeah, some new stuff going around there. And do join in the Google Plus community and chip in with any other stuff that you think might be interesting and new and coming along. Pete Warner says it's worth a listen. The Notting Hillbillies, missing, presumed, having a good time. It was a country rock project formed by Mark Knopfler, Steve, in May 86. I never knew anything about this.
No.
They recorded just one album in 1990, which is this one. And it sounds quite interesting. Have you either of you listened to that?
Nath, do any of these names ring a bell with you?
Yeah, I've not listened to too much Mark Knopfler stuff, so I might give it a listen, actually.
Yeah, well, it's quite interesting. Did you know that Mark Knopfler was involved in another project, Steve?
Mark Knopfler's been involved in so many projects over the years. This is one that had escaped me, but of course he's been very prolific in terms of film soundtracks and all sorts of bits and pieces. Just going back to Blondie, I wanted to...
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Did you catch... Blondie were on the iTunes Festival either last year or the year before. And, you know, performing live, the original band, and it's really quite impressive. And as you say, she would have been 70 years old then, and she really didn't perform like she was 70. So if that's on YouTube, that's also worth a listen. And their version of Atomic, I think they've got an extra guest guitarist in, or certainly a more recent guitarist, lead guitarist, but there's some real pyrotechnics on the instrumentalists on the song Atomic about two-thirds of the way through the set. So that, hopefully that's on YouTube somewhere.
Excellent. Okay, we'll try and find a link and put it in the show notes. Raj Kumar G has suggested that we listen to Rammstein 21, I think it is, XX1, Klavier in Berlin. Something completely different, he says. And this is, if you look at the background of this band, this German band, Rammstein, it sounds as though they're a bunch of real weird people doing very, very wacky stuff. But this particular album is just one that they've toned it all right back down to just being piano instrumentals. And it's really very, very nice. I quite enjoyed that. Anyone, I've never heard of Rammstein, have you?
I haven't. This is where the show notes come in.
Yeah, I'm quite a huge fan, actually.
Oh, right. Okay. Tell us about it, Nath.
Well, they're a German rock band from East Germany, and they became popular after the Berlin Wall fell. I saw their first ever UK gig years ago, and they're really into like pyrotechnics and stuff. Right. Kind of like industrial sounding. They're awesome live.
Wow.
If you want an album to get into, try and track down Mutter. That's the one that really, that was just an amazing album.
What was the name of it again?
Mutter, M-U-T-T-E-R.
Okay, great stuff.
But yeah,
okay.
They don't sing in English at all, so...
Right. Well, they don't need to on this album because it's all piano instrumentals. And it really sounded quite nice. The only trouble is I couldn't find it anywhere. Spotify have got it. So if you've got a Spotify account, you're okay. But everywhere else I looked, even on Amazon, you could download it on Amazon, but you can't. It's not part of any streaming services. So maybe it's quite rare. Adrian B. also. He said that Lazarus the musical is worth a listen, and this is where Dexter does Bowie, or Bowie I should say. This was a stage play written by David Bowie, and a range of performers, including Michael C. Hall, who played Dexter in the TV show. It's a stage show that's about what happened to Thomas Newton, the character from The Man Who Fell to Earth, the film that David Bowie was in and came out quite some time ago. And they go through a new story of that on stage. And it's currently running in London, I think, still, and goes through some of the, you know, famous and not so famous songs of David Bowie's. And it's just really interesting. I went to YouTube and to have a look and see what I could find. And there are some unofficial recordings on YouTube. I'll certainly link to that in the show notes so people can go and have a look. Interesting project, which I'd never really heard of. I did see Michael C. Hall doing Lazarus, and I thought he's got a tremendous voice. He did it really, really well, and some of that stage stuff is really interesting. So thanks, Adrian. Lazarus the musical.
And just staying with YouTube as a tip, you mentioned Rammstein XXI, i.e. 21, Klavier Berlin, and saying it wasn't available online. Of course, YouTube is an incredible resource for music. Even the most obscure albums, I just pasted that into YouTube and got several matches instantly. So most music, you may not think of YouTube as a video service. You may not think of it for streaming audio. And okay, there may well be pictures or an image or even a video to accompany. But yeah, you can find almost anything on YouTube if you just search for it. So that's my tip of the day.
Good stuff. Okay, thanks very much. So don't forget, head across to Google Plus and tell us what you're listening to and share your thoughts about music. Thanks for keeping that going.
Okay, well, on with our special guest, Nathan Jones. Nath, to us, tell us about the very first record, CD or tape you ever bought.
Oh, this is really embarrassing. It was Jeff Love and His Orchestra Super Themes. I got it from Fleetwood Woolworths back in the day. But at that time, I really wasn't into music, so this was quite a nice thing. I knew all the stuff that was on there, so I kind of played that to death. But yeah, that was my first embarrassing music purchase.
That's Super Themes, as in themes of superhero films?
Yeah, I think it had like Space 1999, Blake 7, and all that sort of stuff on it. Yeah, I've not bothered to track it down since I lost the cassette, so...
It's pretty fair to say, Ted, that most of our first CDs, tapes, cassettes were all pretty embarrassing, if we're honest. It's just that most of us on the show tend to gloss over the most embarrassing ones and go to the first sensible purchase. But well done for being honest there, Nathan.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah.
It's worth it.
I think I had big Western movie themes, which I still, to be fair, I still enjoy every now and then to the day, in things like High Noon and The Magnificent Seven and The Good, the Bad and the Ugly. You know, just every now and then you feel in the mood for a little Western classical music. Anyway, Nath, take us through your top six albums of all time then, organised by interest and variety, I guess, but take us with your number six. Introduce it, please.
Okay, so my top six list, I find it difficult to pick my top six albums, and if I did, they'd probably all mid-90s indie, because that's kind of my era. So I've gone for albums that kind of, I'd never heard anything like it before. So that's the thing I've gone for.
Okay.
So number one on my list is Burial and Untrue. This came out a few years ago, and it was on the top number one album vault of that year. And I had listened, and I never heard anything like it before. It's kind of like dub type sound, electronic, with disjointed vocals, lots of samples and glitches. I really, really enjoyed it, and I was quite evangelical about it. It's absolutely perfect for wandering around Manchester late at night or catching the last bus home if you've been to a gig or something like that. I just love it. I don't think it's held up so well now. I had listened to it in preparation of this, and it sounds quite dated, but I still really like it.
I should clarify, you mentioned number one there. We're actually going in reverse order. This is actually your number six, going down to your actual number one later on. But just to clarify that for the listener. So, Ted, what did you think make of Burial Untrue?
Well, this feels a bit like a kind of 80s electronic, trancey, dancey, pulsey kind of music, but with attitude, with something different and interesting, some interesting background noises, some experimentation of what's going on, almost surreal enigma. We mentioned enigma last week, in the last show, rather, yeah. Undertones often. It was growing on me, but I think ultimately this kind of trancey, relentless beat might defeat me in the end. It was nice, though. It's okay, yeah.
I would tend to agree with you. The more chilled out parts, Nath, I thought were really good. And again, I'm a fan of Enigma and ambient and electronic music. But some of the bits here were just too chaotic and too noisy, and they kind of turned me off the album. But it was certainly interesting.
No, I never heard anything like it at the time. And I do get the Enigma comparisons, but it was just something that to me was just so different.
Yeah.
I really liked it.
Good stuff.
Yep. Okay. All right. Well, tell us about your number five.
Right, number five was all thanks to my friend Phil. I was never really into dance music, and he said, well, if you don't like dance music, try this album. So I've gone with Faithless and Reverence. I really like it because there's lots of different styles on there. It's not all just trance and dance. There's some like rap and stuff on it. I really, really like it. Don't think it's as good as this album ever. So the second one is a good follow-up, but the rest for me, once Jamie Catto left, weren't as good. They lost that kind of epic sound that you get in Sal Wemio and Insomnia, which is their biggest hit. And obviously the last one, I think, was on Trigger Happy TV as well.
Yeah. Ted, what did you make of Faithless?
Yeah, I'm not sure about it. I quite like that Trigger Happy track. I'm not sure about it generally. At times, I thought it got interesting, and I think you're right, Nate, that there's variation and there's movement in amongst it, pretty much like that Trigger Happy track, which just didn't fall into anything else. So they certainly move around. The repetitive beating of stuff, again, is a bit, you know, not quite me, but I get that they were trying to do some different things. It just feels like eventually this will give me a headache, and it's kind of 3 a.m. in Ibiza. But it was certainly interesting to get some variation going and movement in different directions.
Yeah, I liked the three well-known tracks. They're obviously three, you know, sounds too poptastic, but the three really well-known trance sections, I love those. The rest kind of left me underwhelmed, as if there were filler in between the main three. But nothing offensive so far in your top six, though, Nath.
Yeah. So number four, I've gone for Faith No More, The Real Thing. This will always remind me of my days at uni. I was a big rocker then, and a lot of the bands there were just straightforward guitar rock, so like Nirvana and Metallica. And Nine Inch Nails, really wasn't into them, but this was the first time I'd heard like the rock rap thing that they do in the opening bit. And the whole album kind of starts off rocking and chills out towards the end, and it was hardly off my stereo. I absolutely love this album, and it's almost my go-to album if I want something a bit punching, a bit rocky, to be honest.
Okay, Ted?
Yeah, this is more like it for me. A five-bloke rock band. Interesting vocal style. Feels a bit like ZZ Top or Guns N' Roses Terrorvision. It reminded me of Terrorvision quite a lot. Then, and I was waiting for it to kind of get a bit mellower towards the end, because you mentioned it in the show notes. And it was right on the last track, Edge of the World, which is a really nice track. And it just goes to show that these people that have got real power and voice and lots of noise in them, when they do a slower track, we mentioned this before, it feels like, you know, they're driving a fast car at a slow speed. There's lots of power under the hood, which everyone knows is there, but they're actually not using it, and they're doing something different and more intelligent. I would have loved this when I was younger, making my ears bleed with drums and guitar throughout. And they also look so cool as well. The band looked just so cool and fab. But I'm too old for this now. Sorry.
Yeah, I loved the instrumental sound. I mean, and I loved the production. I mean, it's just an absolute treat for the ears all throughout. It reminded me of places of a band called Touchstone. Have you heard of Touchstone, Nath?
No, I haven't. No, I'm going to have to look them up now.
They're kind of progressive rock meets metal, but very thoroughly recommended. I wasn't impressed, like Ted, with the vocal style. There's something about the singing which just left me unimpressed. But the rest of the production was just gorgeous. So there's certainly something there for rock fans.
Yeah, he's got a unique vocal style. So I think it's either one of those things you either like it or you hate it, to be honest. Yeah. There's no compromising with Mike Patton.
Okay, take a shot.
Do you know Terrorvision, Nath?
I do, yeah. I had listened to one of their albums. It was had a great cover. I can't remember which one it is, with Alice What's the Matter on, and I really like that.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that's the only album I've heard by theirs, actually.
Okay. How to Win Friends and Influence People.
That's it, yeah.
Something like that. But this band really reminded me of Terrorvision, and I thought, yeah, they've got the same ring about what they're doing here. But
yeah. Yeah, I was never a huge Terrorvision fan, but I did have that grey album and was constantly being played, but I didn't like the other stuff. They seemed to get a bit poppy after that album.
Right, okay. Yeah, I think I'm probably a bit like you. I was mostly focused on that one album. But interesting stuff. Anyway, yeah, sorry, go on. Number three.
So this one started off, I think it was either on Cut or Mojo. They did a CD of Americana, and one of the standout tracks on this was from a band called Richmond Fontaine. And so I got the album, it's called Post to Wire. And I really love ballad-style singing, so like your Tom Waits, your Nick Cave with this, and these guys are no exception. They always sing about down-and-outs and loners in midtown America, quite heartbreaking and stuff, but it just conjures up images of wandering across the deserts in America, you know, in the kind of Oklahoma and all that sort of part of the world. I just love it, the guitar work. I like this album. It's a good one to get into because it's a concept album as well, with about a guy that runs away with a load of money and sends postcards back home saying he's going to hand the money in and stuff like that, but he's just living out of bedrooms and hotels and backs of cars. I just really, really like it. Sadly, they're no more. They split up back end of last year.
Yeah.
Because the lead singer, he wants to concentrate on a more songs from a female perspective, so he's got another band on the go now. But yeah, they're really, really good live. And I really like the style of music. I like the lyrics. So, yeah, lots to recommend on this one.
I'm guessing you like this, Ted?
I really like this. This is right up my street, this one. I love the it sounds so much like Lou Reed, the vocal style. And if it sounds like Lou Reed, then he can probably do no wrong. It's this great vocal technique of singing but almost speaking. Our friend Aidan Bell had a name for that, and I can't remember what it was. But you're right, Nath, there's a story running through it. Yeah. And it feels like a concept album with the tracks of some of the tracks and narrative and don't have music and the tracks flow into each other. It's a great album of ballads and laid back, and there's some country kind of influences going on there, and you can just imagine cruising along the highway in America sipping a Dr. Pepper's or something. Absolutely love this. I really, really am happy that you put this in. And I have ordered the CD. It's on its way. And I'm going to enjoy listening to that. So well done.
It's definitely worth a listen. Yeah, I've got their albums, and they're just really, really good.
Yeah.
I think some of the later stuff's a bit more hard going. But yeah, they're just really, really good.
Having given my YouTube tip earlier on, I had real trouble finding most of this on YouTube, and I haven't got Spotify. So I have to confess, I've only actually listened to the title track, but I did enjoy it very much, Nath. And I agree with everything Ted just said in principle. And I wanted to ask you both, really, given the theme here of Americana and telling stories and themes through an album, I'm guessing that both of you at least have something of an ear for Bruce Springsteen, Nath?
I've not listened to much of his stuff, to be honest. I've got a friend at work who really likes him, but I've not listened to much of his stuff. He's one of those artists everyone recommends, and I should really go and dig out some of his material.
Yeah, well, I would suggest starting with the classic Born to Run, and we're sort of working from there. Every album tends to be different, but Born to Run was the classic. I know it was kind of before your era, but it's worth seeking out. It's been digitally remastered, and it's very much tales from New Jersey and Boy Meets Girl against real atmospheric lyrics and soundscapes and lyricscapes. Thoroughly recommended. Ted, did you listen to much Springsteen?
I avoided it like the plague once I once I heard the first time. It was just he's one, you know, sometimes you just don't warm to an artist, and the voice and this kind of gravelly bit going on, and this whole image of super duper America and all this, and the whole package of him, Springsteen, just turned me off completely. So I didn't really give him a fair chance in terms of musical ability, I don't think. So I can't really comment. I haven't given it a chance.
Yeah, well, just to mention, you're a big fan of packages, you know, sort of retro packages. And I know this is not vinyl, so it's not quite up your street. But Born to Run, that I just mentioned, the digitally remastered version comes in a deluxe package with a DVD, a remastered DVD of a concert for about the same era, plus another DVD showing the making of the album, plus the digital remastered CD itself. I think high-res CD audio as well. And it's all in one package with a booklet, and it's like a deluxe collector's item. And the whole thing was about £16 for all of that, £16, which I just thought was amazing value. So if that's still available, then that's also recommended and a good place to start. But I think you need to give Springsteen another chance, Ted. I know his albums are kind of Marmite in places, and they do have wildly differing styles, a bit like Neil Young. But some of his stuff really does grow on you if you give it another try.
Okay, will do.
I'll give it a go as well.
I must put it in your homework one week, and then that'll force you to listen to it. Take us to your number two, Nath.
So number two is a band called Public Service Broadcasting, and this album's called The Race for Space. They started off as an instrumental band, and they wanted vocals, so they decided to put clips of public information films. And then when they came for their second album, they quoted or sampled bits of the space race, going from JFK's speech through the Sputnik missions through to the Apollo missions. And they put that to all the backing music, and they're just really good. I saw them October last year. They did a question and answer with some scientists from Jodrell Bank as part of the opening for the Manchester Science Festival. Played in its entirety. It's just really, really good. I've never heard anything like it before, where they use the kind of space sound and put that to music. So things like Fire in the Cockpit's quite haunting, and Go I Think It Is, that's really exciting. Lots of, well, not too many different styles, but there's like funk and rock and a bit of electronic in there as well. I really liked it.
Yeah, I totally agree. I think it was a really interesting idea. I'd never heard of this at all. I had no idea about it. And it's great to listen through. It becomes musically interesting as it develops in different areas and different themes, different instruments being used. A little bit trancey in places, but with the injected dialogue and the storyline, again, it made it feel like a real kind of concept album, a story, a flow through. And I really enjoyed listening to it. It was quite mellow and relaxing most of the time. You're getting good at these picks now, just in time for number one.
I found Public Service Broadcasting utterly bizarre, this particular album, but it's also pretty wonderful at times. I'm a big fan of ambient and electronic music, especially to work alongside. But the problem here is that you just get work tapping away, writing away, and this music's ebbing and flowing. And then the spoken stuff comes in, and my brain thinks, hang on a minute, what are they saying? And it kind of wakes me up. So it kind of got in the way. I would have loved to have seen this live, as you just described, because I imagine they'd have all the visuals and some video footage and archive, and that would really have added to the atmosphere.
Yeah, I think they've got some live clips on YouTube. You can go and watch them in action. They've got some official live videos, I think. They've done a live DVD, and I think it was part of the promotion for that. So it's worth tracking that down.
Okay, well, take us through to your big number one, and at last, a band I've actually heard of.
A big number one. So this album is Suede and Dogman Star. For me, it was one of the albums of the 90s because it sounded quite different to their contemporaries at the time. It was overblown. It was sleazy. It just really, really works. And for me, it's an album I can put on if I'm going to sleep, if I'm going to work, if I'm sat on the bus. I just love it. And I think it just works totally as an album. I just love this album.
Ted?
You were mentioning about Bowie, Nate, in the show notes. And I totally agree that the influence of Bowie is really clear. Some of the orchestral arrangements and the way that it's sung, and I mean, those orchestral arrangements they did feel as though they were a little overpowered.
Yeah, I think they are.
Yeah, it's a shame that they were made background and not kind of more a feature of the music. But it was all very nice and it worked really well. And it's so clearly David Bowie's kind of style and one of the styles he went through anyway, certainly. Interesting sounds and tunes. And, you know, it's just amazing how it reminded me in the same way as it did you. I think that I should certainly go and listen to much more of that. And you also mentioned in the show notes that you were, you know, this was an album of the time. And there's an awful lot, we've mentioned this before, there's an awful lot of this nostalgia thing applied to music. So, you know, you can listen to an album like we did on the last show with Joe Jackson, which to me was a great, great album. And Steve listened to it fresh and he just turned him off completely. If I listened to it fresh, maybe that would happen to me. But at the time, I was really heavily into it. And when I listen to it now, it means something to me in the same way as this Suede one does clearly for you, Nath.
Oh yeah, totally.
Yeah, nostalgia. So yeah,
absolutely. I've seen them live so many times now. And this one, their latest album, the ones to get. This has been released a couple of times. Live version of this album, but in its entirety, and released that on CD.
Okay.
B-side to go with this album on the remaster. So yeah, the B-side is just as good as the album. So that's, you know, you listen to them afresh. I don't listen to that much, but the B-sides are just as good as the album. So, well, worth tracking down the expanded one.
Yeah. We Are the Pigs and Heroin, two classic Britpop meets prog songs. That's how I class it. I always like to mash up genres in my descriptions. Those two I really liked, of course. The album, I think, does taper a bit as it goes on. That's my humble opinion. Like many albums, I'm kind of disappointed in a way that when an album starts really, really strongly and then tapers off. I mean, David Bowie's Heroes, Ted, I think, was one we described in the past, where side two of that is almost totally unrelated to side one. I'm kind of a fan of albums where they start and finish with great songs, and then there's interesting stuff in the middle. Here I found that it started with an absolute powerhouse side one, and then side two wasn't quite as good. What do you think of that, Nath? Any comment?
I would say for side two, Asphalt World is a classic. It's a quite long one, but I just love that song as well. It's just epic.
Yeah, but you agree the hits are on side one.
The hits are definitely on side one, yeah, absolutely.
I think that does quite often happen. They're quite, you know, I actually, interesting you should mention Heroes again, Steve, because I spent so much more time listening to Heroes on side two. I was just amazed by the noises that Bowie was making with the second half of that, and the theme and the kind of Berlin thing that he was doing around that time. And I almost didn't know the side one so well. So it's interesting how people look at things differently.
I think Heroes is possibly a bad example, because the point there was that they're very different styles for the two sides. And as you say, I think because the singles on side one of Heroes are so well known, and those tracks, those faster tracks, then the second side becomes the side you discover more than the side you explore, because it's not so well known. So I do kind of agree.
The Windows Phone side.
No, don't bring tech into it, Ted. That's next Saturday. Nathan, take us through your desert island disc. And if you were stranded on a desert island, what could you bear listening to over and over
again? If I was stranded on a desert island, there was no one album that I'd take that I could listen to repeatedly. So I've gone for an album that probably means more to me than any other album I've ever listened to in my life. And that's Strangelove, Love and Other Demons. My friend Dean and I, this was our band. We really loved them. We always put them on if we went out. We saw them live so many times. So it always takes me to those happy times in my 20s, going out, getting a kebab, going to nightclubs and stuff like that. So that's why I picked this. And I just love this album.
Ted?
Yeah, this wasn't the album for me, I'm afraid. It seems a bit characterless to me, and it had no real identity, and it felt a bit samey. Again, probably going back to this place in time where it means something to you. There was a lovely track which I really like called 1432, but even that didn't seem nice to have much nice. Kind of. Yeah, it was. It didn't. It wasn't offensive in any way, but it was just. It felt a bit lost on me. I think part of the problem is that the tunes just didn't seem to hang together for me. And again, we say if I had had your life experience at that time and been your age, maybe I would have got into it and I'd have felt very differently. But it was fine.
I would class this as Radiohead meets Oasis. I don't know how true that rings for you, Nathan. It took me right back to the 1990s, and I should mention I like both Radiohead and Oasis, so that is very definitely a compliment.
Well, apparently Radiohead were inspired by their debut album. So Strangelove's debut album, Time to the Rest of Your Life, apparently Tom York is going on saying that Radiohead are a post-Strangelove kind of band. They did tour together for a while as well.
Aye.
So, yeah.
Yeah, very good. Very good. Okay, let's move on to Tech Matters, a regular section on chewing gum for the ears. How do you generally listen to music? Take us through your setup.
Okay, so in my sitting room, I've got a soundbar under my telly. Everywhere else, I've got a little portable Bluetooth speaker. I live in a small flat, so I don't really need like expensive speakers at the moment. And it's rented as well, so I can't really whack a Sonos system in. So that's how I normally listen to music. It's not perfect, but it kind of just works for me at the moment.
Yeah, and I've noticed under headphones, I noticed you put Alpha Genus V2, which is exactly the same in-ear headphones that I use day to day. And I have to say, they're made by Rockjaw, a British company. Do you use the removable tuning filters? I found that I just stick to the one that has the highest bypass for the treble for crispness of percussion
I just stick to the one. Yeah, I just stick to the one. I never bother switching them around, unfortunately. Yeah. I didn't see he got much out of it, and it didn't sound right to my ears, so I just use, but the one that sounded best to my ears, and I've not switched it out, to be honest.
Yeah. What about mobile devices and listening to music?
So all the stuff that I listen to usually in the house, it's all done through a little Galaxy Tab 2. It's only tiny, so you can't watch telly on it or anything, so I use that to Chromecast, and I use it as a Bluetooth to blast my little speaker. So I use that because I use Google Play Music for most of my music now. Years ago, I loaded a load of CDs on there, so I have that in my cloud account. Then YouTube, I get a Chromecast over to my television set or, like I say, Bluetooth speaker. So that's what I use. When I'm out and about during the day at work, I tend to just use my mobile telephone, and that's a OnePlus One. So I'm trying to get an upgrade on that because the screen smashed. that's how I listen to music during the day.
You're wandering around with a phone with a smash screen. I'm sure we can point you in the right direction. pscforum.co.uk, there's a crossover link between our different shows, Nathan.
So yeah, that's how I normally listen to it at work, on and off really. If I listen to stuff, it tends to be more kind of ambient type music, and when I'm going to bed as well. Driving to work tends to be more rocky, and then if I walk around lunchtime, it's just podcasts, so I use Pocket Casts for that.
Yeah, okay.
I really like it.
In terms of music from the current scene, another section of the show, what do you like, if anything, from the 2017 world?
So the band I'm really going to recommend are a Manchester band. What's my notes here? A Manchester band called Slow Readers Club. I just love them. I've seen them live a few times. They're been supporting James on the last tour. They're doing headline tours around the UK now. Really nice bunch of guys. If you like Joy Division, Echo and the Bunnymen, Editors, that sort of sound, they're the ones I'd recommend to listen to. They're really, really good.
Okay.
Failing that, I've got into a guy called Sampha. He's a bit R&B. It's not really my kind of thing normally, but I really, really liked it. And Loyal, that's how you pronounce it, Loyal Karna. His new guy, just kind of like chill out grime, is probably the only way I can describe it. I just really like it. Again, it's quite dark, but it's nice music.
Okay. All right, well, we'll put links to these various albums and artists in the show notes in case people want to find out more. And if I suspect many listeners, like myself, will have an awful lot of new names to discover after this particular podcast.
And me too.
Yeah. We also have a section of the show called Homework, where Ted and I set each other favourite tracks, or at least interesting tracks from our own collections, for the other one to comment on. My homework by you, Ted, was Alanis Morissette, Under Rug Swept, which I heard, I think, back in the day. And I think I liked it a lot, but I've never actually owned it in any great length of time. I think I heard it on the radio at the time and in various forms. There are some great new, gentler songs. I quite agree. You mentioned in your notes that it wasn't quite as aggressive and as angry as Jagged Little Pill, which I've also got and also like. So a thoroughly good recommendation, a good pick. I've now got this in my collection, and I promise to listen to it much more.
Yeah, it's a good album. I'm pleased that you like it. You set for me Nirvana, MTV Unplugged in New York, which I was able to listen to quite readily as well. I liked everything about this. You were quite right. It's a good pick. I loved the live and acoustic thing, the mellow laid-backness of it. The trouble was that I haven't really listened to Nirvana very much. And the trouble is that his voice, when he starts to push his voice, it starts to get gravelly and coarse. And it sounds like he's kind of trying to do a Britney Spears, you know, and make the voice popular or different or hip. And he was doing so much better when he was doing the slower kind of ballady songs and not pressing it out and pushing it out. But laying that aside, they're clearly very, very good musicians, as was he, a great guitarist. That, you know, he clearly had a lot of ability. The voice thing just put me off a bit. So I don't know why that had to be done, if it was purposeful or just done for effect. I really don't know. But it just kind of took the edge off for me.
Yes, there's an interesting story, really, because this was recorded very shortly before he shot himself, committed suicide. It's very sad. He's obviously quite unwell physically and mentally in various ways and really showing the strain. In fact, I believe, reading the backstory in one book or other, this MTV Unplugged very nearly didn't happen at all. And it was kind of on a wing and a prayer. And it's kind of a miracle it happened and turned out so well. And the bit at the end, where is I think it's the song Where Do You Sleep Last Night, a title like that, where he really pushes his voice beyond all extremes and the whole voice just breaks down. But it's really demonstrating the emotion of the song, really, and given his own mental state at the time, it kind of adds new meaning and sends a chill right up your spine. If you just watch that one song or listen to that one song again, especially if you watch it on YouTube and see his facial expressions as well, and then bearing in mind that this was shortly before he killed himself, then all of a sudden it adds an extra element of explanation as why his voice went that far.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll give it another go. We're bearing those things that you said in mind. But are you saying that earlier in his career, when he was not unwell, his voice, when pushed, was not coming out that way?
No, he often pushed his voice. this was grunge rock, Ted. This was never mind the audio quality. Let's make a little loud noise.
Were you a fan, Nath?
I love Nirvana. I listened to Pieces. I had all their albums, all the bootlegs at the time. I don't listen to as much as I used to. I think for me, Nirvana, very much of their time, and the music doesn't sound as exciting or as relevant as it once did. But I love the Unplugged performance, especially Penalty. That's just heartbreaking.
Right.
It really is, and I really like it.
Yeah. Okay, I should have another listen, Steve.
Okay, well, our homework for the next show, I'm setting you Derek and the Dominoes. I'm staying in well-trodden territory here, you can probably gather. Derek and the Dominoes, Layla and Other Assorted Love Songs. Some lovely 1970s indie rock, all laid back, and when Layla itself starts about halfway through the album with a thunder of guitars, hopefully you've got your stereo cranked up to high volume. I reckon you'll be blown off your chair, but in a good way.
One of the things I haven't done with Derek and the Dominoes is listen to any of the back end stuff that has not been, that, you know, hit songs. And so I shall be listening. I mean, I know clearly the hits, but I shall be listening to the stuff I don't know and seeing what I think of that. So I'll have a go at that. Now, what I'm setting you this time, Steve, on the face of it, seems far too much like the Carpenters and elevator music to be taken seriously. But Beverly Craven, bear with me, that she did an album called Love Scenes. Now, she is a singer-songwriter with really good original songs and a delightfully talented pianist. And a lot of the reflections in this particular album are about motherhood, and she had her first child. But it's not, because of that, it's not sycophantic and sickly. The songs stand up, and I personally think it's her best work. I've got three or four of her albums, and I think that she's a really talented lady. And you know how much I like your female singer-songwriters that are also pianists, and she fits the mould for me. So have a go at that if you don't already know it.
Okay, Nath, you heard us mention there are three people. Start with Beverly Craven. Have you heard much from her?
No, I haven't, unfortunately. But I'll have a listen to her.
Okay, Derek and the Dominoes, I'm guessing it's been way before your time.
That album. I really love
that
album.
My dad got
me into Cream when I was about 18. And I do love Layla, another assorted love song. And one of my go-to songs on there is Why Does Love Got to Be So Sad? I think it's better than Layla, actually.
Yeah.
I've clearly got a treat coming. I shall look forward to it.
You're going to have a great 2 weeks, Ted. Oh, also, Nathan, to mention Alanis Morissette, I presume you're at least aware of her.
I didn't like her debut album, but I really like this one that Ted picked. I really, really did. I wasn't expecting to like it, but it'll definitely go and repeat this one.
The one in the middle, the supposed former Infatuation Junkie, was really bizarre. If you listen to that one, it's just completely off the wall. I don't know where she was going with that, but she seemed to go from one extreme to the other, and in the middle kind of fell apart.
Thank you. I think we're kind of out of time. It's been great having you on, Nath. Where can people find you online? Just plug yourself again.
So look for Nathan L. Jones. I'm on Instagram, Twitter, and Google Plus as well. I'm more of a lurker and a commenter rather than a poster. But yeah, you can find me on there and get in touch with me, and I'll respond to people. So,
Is there anything you wanted to say, Nath, about who you are, where you live, how old you are, and what you do for a living, just quickly?
Oh, yeah. I'm Nathan. I live in Manchester. I'm 42, and I'm a software developer.
Oh, right. Okay.
Okay. Ted, any last words from you?
No, just the usual reminder, head to PodHub UK to find out what we're doing elsewhere in other audio podcasts. And a big thank you to Nath. You've been great, and really interesting picks, some of which I should, well, as I said, I've ordered one of the CDs, and I don't often do that. So thank you very much for coming on.
No, thank you. Thank you very much, guys.
And don't forget, if you would like to be a guest on Chewing Gum for the Ears, we'd like to have some fresh blood, some fresh musical picks. So do get in touch on the various links and the show notes, and you'll get in touch there. And we'll have you on as a guest very willingly indeed. Goodbye from my two co-hosts.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
And you catch the show notes with all the links and albums and artists and at stevelitchfield.com/music, or, as Ted has said, via PodHub UK. You've been listening to Chewing Gum for the Ears.